But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Not sure what episode intro this is going to be, Michael Berlew.
Ooh, it's a mystery to all of you.
Oh, yes, I do know exactly what episode this is going to be. Hey, Dom.
Hey, Scott.
I was just doing an intro for a nameless show, and I said I don't know what episode intro this is going to be, but you just called in. So I know exactly what episode this is going to be.
That's good. I'm glad I could help.
Well, I wouldn't say help, but
you appeared.
Yeah, you appeared.
We love our guests here at Verbal Shenanigans.
We love you, Dom.
I don't know you.
I love
Dom.
You guys.
Yeah.
Dom is
Dom.
Oh,
Dom is actually our biggest supporter.
Ooh.
Yes, he.
He's the one guy who listened to Gay Uncles and Hippo Guy.
He's one of the 17 people who decided that listening to the one episode when I put two out in a week was worth listening to. So, Dom, you win. I don't know. I don't really know what you win, but you win something.
We got some empty beer bottles here. We can give them that.
We can give you a beer bottle or a signed. I don't know. Foreclosure bill.
That's actually my biggest blind spot. I feel like a opposer listening to you guys because you're all about the craft beer, and that's like the one thing that I don't relate to. Because I'm not a beer guy.
You're Italian.
Yeah, I'm more of a wine guy than a beer guy.
Shocking! You're really breaking the stereotype here, Dom.
Hey,
I like to drink olive oil.
Yeah, yeah. I take shots of olive oil and Peroni, and life is good.
Mm. Exactly.
I'm getting a little interference from the phone here. But, Dom, you were – let's jump right into it here. Well, actually, before I introduce you again, Michael Berlew, Dom Bagnato, Verbal Shenanigans doing something very interesting.
Okay, detail.
A first-time thing for me and for us and for
the world.
I am running my own show, a comedy show, where the great,
don't stop buzzing when you did that.
Dropped the phone. I have a pretty damn good lineup coming in. I'm doing a show at Table 42 in Dover, New Jersey on February 22nd. You could catch, let's see who's on the show. Well, I'm on the show, Michael Berlew. Well, I'm hosting the show.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well,
it's
where
kind
do
of
you
a,
go from the host?
It's kind of a good start. Then guesting on the show will be my partner here, Michael Berlew.
Oh, well. Well, we're pushing the boundaries here with our first show, you know.
And then, but then the real acts come in. I got Chips Cooney, who we work with on the Johnny Watson Show.
Legendary.
A fantastic comic, legendary New Jersey comic, been on America's Got Talent, been all over the place, worked
Bench
with
Warmers.
Everyone from Chris Rock to Robin Williams. He knows all those guys. He was on Bench Warmers. A couple Adam Sandler things, good friends with Otto and George. So the guy has been around, and he is going to do the feature spot, which we're going to give him a good amount of time. And then our good pal Johnny Watson headlining the show, our first show. What can I say? I need the support. I need anyone who listens. I need anyone who just wants to be kind to me and come on down. It's $30. $30 for dinner and the ticket to this show. I mean, you're not going to get much better than that, people.
Hell of a lineup. Hell of a place. And all. We checked it out a couple days ago. Very nice restaurant. The back area. Plenty of space. It's going to be great. We're going to keep on building it. So, again, people who support us, you dumb, make sure you come out and watch us.
Yeah, so, basically, this is just a little ad to Dom to please come.
I'm all about it. I'm hoping you guys do it often, and I'll be there as many times as possible.
Well, the goal is, the long-term goal is to do it once a month. We'll see. We'll see. With the guy, I cut a deal with him, and we'll see how it goes. And, yeah, that's it. I mean, if the first show rocks, I'm sure he'll sign us for a second show. But the hardest thing is keeping that momentum going. The first show is always new, you know? So, Dom, we've been in touch. We've been in touch multiple times. You got some big news on your film. If you go back to an episode called A Convenient Truth, which is about Dom's film, the film he made for, I can't remember, forever, and what it seemed like. Is actually getting theatrical release.
Ooh.
Theatrical release. You got to tell us. Well, first off, I know when we talked last, you were talking about, maybe I'll make it downloadable. Maybe I'll make it, try to get it on Netflix. You weren't quite exactly sure on the, theatrical part of it. But, so how did this come about?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically the last time we talked, I was still in the initial stages of trying to figure it all out. But the answer was kind of both, actually. So we are, there are a lot of platforms online for distribution, and the one we settled on is called VHX.
VHS, so yes, VHS. Yeah, that went out a long time ago, Dom. DVDs are now streaming.
Betamax is making a comeback, I think.
It's VHS. It's hard to know, it's hard to year over the thing, but it's VHX, better than like X-ray.
I know. I'm just kidding. See, that was a joke. That's what I try to do.
You'll hear that on the show if you show up.
Yeah. Are you a comedian or something?
No. Well, that's so, what I call myself.
No, yeah. So we actually are going to use that platform, and the film is actually going to be on sale, and it's actually available for pre-order already, but people will be able to get their digital downloads on February 26th. So the problem was, okay, that's true, but how do you promote it? How do you get people to know that that's out there for sale? And the answer was, one of the answers was actually pretty straightforward, which is that's why critics exist. Like, that's why people get reviews for films.
And then
the question becomes, how do you get reviews? How do you get critics to talk about your film? Turns out there's a rule. If you run for 1 week in a theater in New York, you get reviews. It's that simple. So it's one of those things where we approached the Quad Cinema in New York, which is on 13th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue. And you basically just have to submit. And as long as, they look at the film, they make sure it's legitimate. And if you can find a slot, then you essentially four-wall the theater, which is basically renting the theater for a week. And they take care of everything.
So how did you get about bamboozling them about the legitimate film thing?
I don't know. He actually
showed them Porky's too. It was quite funny. They loved it.
I was asking myself the same thing, actually. But, very, very happy that it's going to... It's just cool to make a film to be able to tell people, like, oh, yeah, you can just go to the theater on February 20th and watch it.
What theater?
It's the Quad Cinema. It's the name of the theater. It's a little...
Where's that?
Little theater on 13th Street, and it's called the Quad because it's four screens. So it's only got four screens, and it's 13th Street between 5th and 6th in New York.
Now, that's freaking awesome. And what is the running date for that?
So it's a week-long run, February 20th through the 26th. And we get, you know, it's in a movie theater, so not it's five times a day. You know, it's basically
that's awesome, man.
I'm a half hour, so like 1:30, 3:30, 5:30, 7:30, 9:30 every single day from that Friday through Thursday will be, you know, it'll be screening. People can just buy tickets, obviously, and we're actually going to do at the 7:30 screening probably every day or almost every day. We're going to have like a special guest Q&A after it. With like either the lead actors or the editor or something like that.
Nice, nice. Like a little, like on stage, you mean, or like a recorded
well,
thing?
Just, you know, like we'll be there at the screening.
Oh, okay.
At the 7:30 screening. Yeah. So then anybody who buys a ticket to the 7:30 screening, at the end, there'll be like a 15-20 minute Q&A after.
That's awesome, man.
Go ahead. No, it's a pretty standard thing at like the IFC Center, which I'm for, you know, all the little theaters, they play independent movies and they tend to get extra people in the seats by having that like Q&A incentive because people like to go and be able to ask questions and stuff afterwards. Or in my case, like Angry Mobs will probably try to, I don't know, throw things at me or ask me why I'm racist.
Are you a comedian?
What?
interesting question. Is there any like different prep you have to do for the film, like the way it is now, and then to get it ready for like theater sound or anything like that? Like, is there a different edit that has to go out, like a theater edit, or is it just the way it is now?
It's not a different edit. What we had to do was create a DCP, which is the digital cinema package.
Okay.
Which is basically just it's a specific file type that goes on the server at the theater, and then that's what they use to project it. And I mean, if it was like a big budget movie with crazy sound, we probably would do a special sound mix for the theater and things like that. But that would only be like if we had access to sit in that theater ahead of time and then like try to mix it specifically to the room. And it's, I mean, you've seen it at least. It's a really little movie. It's not the type of movie that needs like special tweaking or tuning.
Yeah. I mean, but, so now like, with the theatrical release, what is the goal after that?
Well, I mean, like I said, the main reason we're doing the theatrical is because then we get reviews. And I mean, the way it works is like you get a PR person with the theater, mm-hmm. and she has all sorts of contacts, and she goes out to all these, you know, she has like a listserv of like 300 critics or something like that.
Is it always
in New York?
Is it always a she?
Well, I mean, I'm saying she because the person is a she, but I actually have no idea.
That's women's work there, Scott. Women call the men to review my movies.
Yeah,
she goes out there, she tries to get people interested in the movie, then you know, if they are, they'll request a screener in advance, and we'll send them either a link or a DVD, and then the whole thing is they write their reviews, and the reviews will start coming out the same week as, the, like, a few days before the movie actually comes out, and hopefully there'll be good reviews, and people will be like, oh, hey, I want to go see that, and we can, like, pull their quotes for the poster, and you know, and then we can get, then the goal is to get some follow-up so that we can say, oh yeah, you didn't get to see the movie in the theater. Well, you can go to this site and buy it yourself and watch it.
Right.
So that's the plan.
Now, you, after you do like a theatrical release, like what are the, like what can happen from there? Like, distribution, or is it more theatrical releases that you're looking for, like to be spread around, or I don't even know what that's called. It's like almost like syndicated or whatever the hell you call it.
Yeah, I mean, that is one model. Like, you could be trying to get, well, you could do like a platform release where you release in a few theaters and try to get picked up and then do like a wider release. But I mean, in our case, the main reason for the theatrical release is the reviews to promote online sales. Like, we're not looking for, I mean, it costs to be in a theater in New York for a week, it costs $11,000.
Wow.
So
where did this money come from?
I know you had a little
Kickstarter or something like that, or and it, actually, if
yeah.
I can get this out this week, so why don't you give us the, if it's still going, like where people can go to you know, throw you $5, $10, $20, something, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. That'd be cool. I mean, we do have a Kickstarter going on right now, and it's pretty much to pre-sell the tickets. You know, we have 5 screenings a day, 146-seat theater. So the idea is, and with the rental of the theater, like, we get all the money for the tickets because we've given the theater their money up front.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically what we're doing is using the Kickstarter to pre-sell the tickets just so that we know that people are going to be in those seats. The Kickstarter link is really, really long, but I mean, if anybody goes to livingdaylights.org, there's a little thing on the right that has like the running tally of the Kickstarter. We're actually up over $6,000 already.
That's great.
Yeah, people have been really generous, and we've been doing it for 11 days. We've got 19 days to go.
Wow.
And we're just trying to make that $11,000 goal.
So now, when you made this $6,000 donation, were you hoping that everyone else would pick up the other $5,000?
Mom, I keep clicking the link. Nobody else is joining me. This is horrible.
I only donated $5,500.
Wow, well, good for you, buddy. It's kind of like this podcast. Like, I keep looking for advertisement, like how to do it. And it's like, well, you could do like an Amazon dot thing. And then when people click on the banner, you get like 11 cents per click. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I clicked on it. Scott, yeah, so, no. Let me just get out my change here. There's a penny. There's a dime. Here you go.
Thank you, buddy. Yep. All right. Our first profit on the podcast. Yeah. Live.
Yes. I actually have like the whole AdSense thing on livingdaylights.org. I started that mostly to like do blog posts of like and for every scene in the movie what I learned making it.
Yeah, I haven't read all of them because there are a lot, but read a good amount. Yeah. I like the one, there was a couple like about like the editing side of it, which I'm kind of interested in.
But
a cool, interesting take that you decided to do with the blogs. And like the last podcast we did, you were mentioning you were starting to do that. I think you were only a couple in at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm through like scene 75 or something now. But I was only mentioning that to say that like I've had ads on that site the whole time, which is over a year now. Probably probably 13 or 14 months. I think I've made like $11 total.
Yeah, buddy.
So,
there you go.
It
isn't really.
So now you're only $5,889 in debt. Another question. Now the movie was filmed in 2000. What?
Well, we filmed it over a long period of time. We filmed it from 2009 to like 2011, I think.
Right.
2011. Exactly.
So that kind of goes right into my question. The love for the movie, like the love for the product that you created, is it still 100% there? Like, is it more of a choice thing? Like, I have to love this movie to try to, you know, get it out there. Or is it still like, I love exactly the finished product of this? You know, because that's a pretty long time, you know, like it's a pretty long time. So it's just to get into the theater, it has to be like one of the amazing things for you. Like, okay, people are going to see my movie like in a seat with popcorn or something, you know, and just enjoy it, hopefully. Is there that love still for the product, or is it the love more for the process? Like, you made it, you want it, and now it's getting somewhere further. Like, I don't know. I don't even know if that was a good question.
It's a good question. I mean, imagine it's similar to you. It's like you love the process of writing jokes and going up there, but I don't think you're ever going to like get off stage after you've gotten years and years of material and you're doing like an hour set. Even then, I don't think you're ever going to walk off stage and be like, that was a perfect set. You know, you're always going to be looking at what could be different, what could be better.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. But, like,
I do that with my big 8-minute sets that I get nowadays.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know me, I'm not like the most optimistic, positive person who's jumping. Like, I'm not the guy who's going to be like, look at what I just did. That is amazing. I love it. Everything about it. But
I think it would be important for you to tell people to go see the movie. Maybe get a little more optimistic. Just a tad.
I'm not really optimistic. You don't really need to see it.
I didn't need that 11 grand, you know?
What I was going to say is, like, what's different about making a movie from writing jokes is that, like, what's cool about writing jokes and going out there, it's like, you're doing it. It's all you. You don't have to ask anybody permission, and you can do it all yourself. But, what, like, I got to collaborate with literally over 100 people. Right, so right. There's a lot of stuff that I love about the movie, and it has that, you know, it's easy to love it because it has nothing to do with me, and I can't take credit for it. You know, it's like an actor improvising a perfect line, and I love it, and
right.
it's all on them. Mm-hmm. Or a shot that the DP made, or a problem that I couldn't solve that, like, the editor made, like, way better than I could imagine. So there's a lot of stuff that I do love about it, but it's usually the stuff that I also am not taking credit for. Right. It's easier to do, you know.
Now, do you find yourself becoming more critical of yourself as you see the film post, you know, now you're on a couple years now, like, do you find yourself becoming more critical, or is it just like you have to leave it as the production of that time, kind of?
I think you kind of have to let it go. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this the first time, but we had two test screenings.
Yes.
And after the second test screening, it was worse than the first test screening, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so that was what let me kind of let it go, because I said, if I keep working on this, I'm actually making it worse, not better.
Right.
And so that was a way where, like, you know, like, again, if you tell a joke and it kills, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to tweak this and make it better, and you make it worse, it's going to be easy for you to go back to the original one.
Right.
And be like, hey, actually, that's better.
Yeah, I was actually going to, like, throw an analogy as a joke, like, and it's also sometimes if you believe in the joke, you know, one night it could do amazing. The next night it could literally have people staring at you like you're just weird and you're terrible.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to believe in the premise of it, and which is,
yeah,
like, even writing a joke. Like, some now I've been going through this new process where I've been looking at my old, like, bits that some of them never even hit stage, like, because I was like, blah, blah. And, you know, where I'm at as a comedian, I don't get a lot of stage time, so you do what works for the most part, and then you kind of keep doing it, maybe throw something new in there, but you look at these things that you wrote, and you're like, you know, man, like, there's some good premises in there, and, like, the next day you could hate it. You could wake up and be like, that was terrible. Like, sometimes you have to, like, step away and come back, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And find out if you really do love it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm not an editor, because that's the part that drives me crazy, because there's literally infinite ways to tweak anything. And you can, like, step back and look at it the next day and love it and hate it. And, you know, it's just, there's so much in that tweaking that you can do forever. So it's a really difficult thing to do. But, I mean, like, there are certain parts where you have to, like, if it's your voice, you have to stick with it. Like, there's certain parts that are in the current final cut of the movie that are much longer than I know some audiences are going to like.
Right.
But, like, if I cut it down, it's not funny at all. And it, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a Shaggy Dog story. And it's like, you have to have that perfect amount in there so that it's funny. It, you know, that you're giving enough for it to be funny, but it's not too long. And that's totally a judgment call. And ultimately, it the version that's in there is the one that I think is optimal. But it's, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's whatever audience is there that night. Some are going to laugh really hard, and some are going to be like, okay, I fell asleep a minute and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, it's kind of interesting we're going through the whole filmmaking versus comedy comparison. I mean, I guess one interesting thing kind of brought up is, like, you and I go on stage, we can get that instant gratification or that instant, you know, foresight that we did
right.
something bad on there. I mean, mm-hmm. how hard is it for you, like, going through this whole process of making a film for 3 years and pretty much sitting back going, I mean, I might like it, but I'm not really sure what's going to end up with the final product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really hard. And I forget now what podcast I was listening to, but it was another podcast, and it was
What?
It was some comedian who was making a movie.
Are you kidding me? I thought we were the first one out there.
I thought we copyrighted podcast.
Who is this Bill Burr you speak of? Marc Maron? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I had happened to run out of all the Verbal Shenanigans podcasts, and I was jonesing so much.
There you go.
Yeah. And anyway, it's not a good story because I forget who it was, but it was a comedian who had made a film, and he was talking about that instant gratification of trying out material. You could think of something that day and that night, try it out, and start honing it. And it's really, really daunting, especially when you're not even only the director, but the writer. And it's like, you could write something and literally not know if it works. And in this case, until like 5 years later. And there's a very real possibility that it could just not work. And, you know, and that happened. Like, there are some scenes that are just cut from the movie that, like, we thought would work through writing it, through many, many drafts, through filming it, through many takes, through edits, and then they get pulled from the movie. You know, it's like, you don't have that feedback until much later, and especially with this type of comedy too, because it's a dry satire. So, like, you know, for the most part with stand-up comedy, people are laughing audibly, and that's like, yeah.
But that's not, your not when Berlo goes on.
By the way, that's why you guys don't want me to come to your show, because, like, even if I think what you're saying is hilarious, I'm the guy who's like smirking in the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not good.
I always like to tell Berlo after he bombs, they're laughing internally. They're laughing internally at you.
Then why did they throw stuff at me?
There's a reason they ask for the check so quick.
But I actually love when you guys talk about, not that you've done it that much, but like a couple times you talked about like bombing and kind of like learning from it, loving it, and not loving it, but not bothering you.
Yeah, that's been a theme a lot lately in like some of these podcasts, is learning. It's not only just bombing, because like I could say I bombed probably like 4 times that I can think, like bomb, like where like nothing is to laugh. But I've had, oh my God, as many, you know, say I do 8 to 10 minute set, as many as like a good half and a bad half, because I feel like that always happens. But I'm starting to realize that it's not worth, you know, you got to take the good and the bad, which is why I've been recording every single one of my sets and you're looking at them and going, yeah, what was wrong here? You know, and sometimes you have to give yourself credit and say, yeah, the audience that night was just not into it, and get the reaction from the other comedians at the show, like, oof. Like Berlo, that night we went to Bonner's Room, and the first night we went there together.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, but they had the family table, some old ladies.
They were just so focused on their linguine and just eating and just... They did not care, and it didn't matter who you were. You could have threw Louis C.K. out there, and he would have been like, "Yeah, you know." So there is, and it's so hard to figure out. It's like a matrix, you know. Like it's like, was it the audience? Was it me? Was it my energy? Yeah. Did I have a bad day? Was my delivery weird? Mm-hmm. Did I look awkward on stage? You know, like, and I guess it's the same thing with a movie. Like, you could play it one place and it's great. You could play it the next place and they're not liking it. You could, you know. Is it the time of day? Is it there's so many variables in it.
The mood they're in. Did they drink?
Yep.
Stuff like that.
Yep. Do you just have to believe in it? You have to believe in it, and you'll find your audience. And if you don't, maybe you reinvent yourself. You know, maybe you reinvent yourself to something different, or maybe you need to work harder. You know, like it's always, there's always that thought process in my head. And like, I can't, nowadays I look at my sets, and I record them, and I'll be like coming off the stage, and I'm like, that was a great set. You know, I killed, and you have this, like, you have this performance high, what I call it. You have this performance high. But then when you listen back, and the laughter seemed a little louder in your head, and you listen back, and there's not as much laughter. It's like, I need to work on this. So it's like.
And the worst is, like, when you attempt something new, and then you have, like, no basis for, okay. Was it the audience? Was it me? Was it this? Was it that? I mean, and an unfortunate thing is, you can.
I think you might have turned off your mic. There you go.
I didn't touch it.
Well, I hit the little mic stand thing. So go ahead.
All right.
Start again.
All right. I was just saying how...
I was like, wait a minute. I don't hear burlowing for once. That's
a pretty amazing feat there.
I hear him when he's snoring three towns away. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that like one of the worst things is like when you're with an auntie, you try something new and you have no basis on, okay, was it me? Was it them? Do you come back to it? Was it really that bad? I mean, that's one of the worst things where you don't even have something to work back off of to say, where did this go? Do I just can it? Is it really that bad? Or go from there? But yeah, it's just really weird. And even like when you do like open mics and all, I mean, that's one of the hardest things. And that's something I had to work on, like doing more open mics and just knowing that you go in there saying, well, it's a bunch of comedians. It's not going to be a bunch of people who's going to be like busting out laughing unless you pull out some Louis C.K. crap, which I haven't been able to find yet. So
I have. That's pretty much.
You have?
You know, I feel like Louis's a little bit below me.
Little bit.
We might as well go to the future of this whole thing and the future of you too, Dom, as a filmmaker. Is there anything in the works for new stuff, or is it still this is my baby, and it's going to get there?
There's definitely some stuff I'm writing in the works, and the thing is, like, what I can't do is, like, completely abandon. Like, what I would like to do is, like, okay, the movie's done. It's in someone else's hands to sell it now. Mm-hmm. And the reality of, like, independent filmmaking is that you can't do that. Like, so February 20th is the release in theaters. February 26th is when it's available for sale online, digital download. And that means that, like, after February 26th, then it's on us to market, you know, I don't know how constant that is or generate new content and things like that, but we have to continue to be creative to get people to pay attention to the movie so that they'll download it and buy it.
No,
so it's kind of like
download. Do you mean like you'd pay to download it or?
That's what the VHX thing is. It's like, it's going to be contruthmovie.com. It's like the website's up already. Basically people can go and you can download it. And it's just a platform that all sorts of independent filmmakers use to sell their film directly to their public, pretty much.
Right.
Now, is there any plans for like a DVD release or extras or anything like that, or is it you're pretty?
Well, there's two packages through VHX, and one of them is just the movie, and then one has like a deleted scene and comes with two of the. Like MP3s of two of the songs that we recorded and downloaded for the movie.
Okay.
So those are the extras. With the Kickstarter, we're doing a limited edition run of 100 Blu-rays. I'm not doing any DVDs because the DVDs are actually, I mean, DVDs are standard definition. You know, it's downgraded. So it actually looks so much worse on DVD than it does with the digital download. And it costs more to produce, and it would cost more to sell to people.
No.
So
what I would like as a Kickstarter is if you and your dad just got together and watched a movie and commentary from your dad. Because I grew up playing soccer with him. And you know what? If you really want a donation from the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, your dad's commentary is really what I'm looking for.
See, I don't even know his dad, and now you fascinated me.
See?
I could create a verbal shenanigans podcast package for VHX. Oh. And it could be just for you.
What if we did a tie-in together where like I'm hopefully getting t-shirts made soon where like you get a t-shirt and me, your dad, Burlew, and you will watch the movie and just hook up mics and do a commentary. And you get a T-shirt and the commentary.
I think we should go for it.
You were thinking about creative ways. That's as creative as you get.
I want to go one step further. I want to bring a camera to one of the shows and let's go Mystery Science Theater on this.
Oh yeah,
just take the back of our four heads, just commentating as the movie's going along.
Yeah, like this shit sucks. I mean, Dom, this is great.
We can do it, but the silhouette of the Mystery Science Theater by the end would be me in the fetal position, just crying.
Well, that's half the fun.
But that's even better.
Yeah.
And that's when I bring in the big gigantic 4K I have to light your face, and then get get high definition footage. But I'm thinking your dad, me, you, and Berlew doing a little commentary, a little verbal shenanigans tie-in. That could be gold right there.
I smell money.
All of our 6 to 7 listeners would love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's one of them, so 5 to 6.
Yeah. So you would be participating. So now we're down to 5.
You'd have to ride the controls on the audio a lot, though, because all of my dad's audio would be so much louder than everyone else's.
Oh, that sounds like a challenge to me.
Oh. But, Dom, if there was anything you can plug to get some help, whatever this podcast can do to get you some help and get you, you know, big-time support of artists and NBA basketball players that don't call you back on time and things like that. what could we do to help you here? Like, well, how can our listeners get out there and see the film? Or obviously they can go to the theater, but where can they go to? You know, I want to view this. I'm kind of interested. Maybe I can't make it out to the city. How can I see it?
Yeah. I mean, so for anybody who is in New York or in the New York area, they can go to the Kickstarter. So just go to Kickstarter and type in A Convenient Truth, or, like I said, go to livingdaylights.org and you can find the link there. And I only mention that because we're selling the tickets for $15 and we're selling the movie for $15 that way. And if you buy them both together, we're selling them for $25. Mm-hmm. But we're also, I mean, the other way, if you can't do that, is you can just go to contruthmovie.com. And that's the site for the movie where it'll actually be sold through. The deluxe package, I think, is like $17 or something like that. The one that we're selling for $15 on Kickstarter. So that's literally, it's cheaper to buy that on Kickstarter if you're still interested before it's over.
Okay. That's great, man. You know, what do you think about us coming down and doing a podcast outside of the theater, maybe getting some theater people's reactions afterwards, coming to see the movie?
That would be awesome. That would be, if you can make it out any night that week, I'll pay for you guys to come out there. I'll help in any way I can. Even if it's just to grab, you know, I'll give you guys dinner or whatever, but even if it's just to grab sound bites as people are leaving the theater to get their comments.
Listen, you don't got
to
pay. A free meal is appreciated. That's definitely awesome. I want to get out there, so if I can, I would love to get out there, set up, maybe in the lobby or something like that. Talk to people, talk to, maybe instead of talking to you, because you're kind of boring, talk to some of the cast members.
If it's start to go bad, we'll just start interviewing people about other movies they saw.
Yeah, I'll be like, oh my God, Punisher 2 is coming out. You know, like...
Well, we're actually considering doing like a video version of that where we just get all the people talking shit about how much they hated the movie as they leave the theater and then cutting that together and just having like full quotes about how offended they are and how they can't believe what
critics
they just saw.
Critics agree.
But yeah, if we can get out there, why don't we get out there? You don't got to pay for our train fare or anything like that. We'll get out there on our own. A meal. And then let us watch the movie. We'll set right back up at the credits and then try to get the visitors and stuff like that. That would be very cool.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you want to do that, that would be awesome. I mean, and again, it's any night between February 20th and 26th. We're running every night, all day and every night. So.
And then what you're going to do is we're going to do a comedy before the show on stage and just trash the movie.
Ooh.
And then,
Hey, listen. I currently have an empty slot for one of the Q&As that I'm looking to fill. So if you guys want to do a 15-minute comedy after.
All right. I feel like that's my baby here. Mm. Like I've kind of been seeing it from the post-production to this at this point.
Like, well, I don't know anything about this movie, so it's like my estranged baby. You know, right, that like baby I had sex with a girl in Bulgaria and just left her there.
Like most of your babies.
Yeah.
You heard about it once 9 months ago. Yeah. Now you're hearing about it again.
See, Berlew doesn't listen to any of the old podcasts.
No.
So he's like,
no,
oh,
pre-Berlew stuff. Come on.
He's like, unless I'm on it, it was probably not good.
Yeah. Well, Berlew should, whenever we're done, he should go and check out the trailer and then You should record his reaction to the theater.
You got the computer right here. Can we put it up there now?
We could. Would you be able to hear audio? I'm not sure. I have the set up for a basketball player who's not getting on the podcast right now.
Does your promo start with "In a World"? Those are the best movies.
We could also do like a verbal shenanigan. You send us the footage and we'll overdub the voices. Ooh. That would be fun too.
Rip tracks.
Now, Dom, the real reason I'm interviewing you is to get closer to your father, because he had a pretty big influence in my life in high school. How would you explain your father to people who don't know him?
My dad is a very, very passionate, very Italian, retired man.
Yes. Your dad would watch travel soccer games, like 15 and under soccer games, like Italy was playing Brazil in the World Cup finals.
It's called passion, Scott.
Yeah. I had the passion. Trust me. I would kill people and then somehow wonder how I'm still in the game.
You had passion and I had passion, but neither of us have the level of passion that my dad has.
Well, you're right.
But that's a whole other level.
Yeah. I mean, like, but your dad taught me, like, it was okay to be dirty and it was okay to, like, no.
There's such a thing as a professional foul. It's true.
Right. I was the master of the professional / unprofessional foul. It was called.
Yeah, you were
the
a little too gangly to be able to pull it off. Well.
It's okay to punch the opposing team in the face. Just make sure you just get a yellow card for it.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. If the kid's still breathing, even if it's wheezing, it wasn't a good foul. You know, like, I'll never forget. Here's a throwback memory. We were playing high school soccer together. It was this Sayreville game. There was a ball. Remember, they had this really fast black forward. He was really good. And the team wasn't that good, but he was really good. And he got a ball down the line. I'll never forget this. I put my foot in front of his, like, he was in front of me, like, kind of, against the sideline. He was in front of me. And I put my shoulder into the back of his, like, his shoulder and went down with him as hard as I could. All of a sudden, he was like, you know, he was out for a while. I didn't even get called for a foul. They called out of bounds. He took a while to get up, and he was like, like breathing, and I was covering him. I'm like, dude, you all right? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, 20 minutes later, he went out of the game. It turned out he had a broken collarbone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, I was mad because I didn't get to his neck.
That's because the referee was just racist. That's why he didn't get a call.
Right.
Was it Doug Max?
Yeah. Yeah, the referee was racist. You know, like, he was. You know, he definitely hated black people. That's why he didn't call a foul on me.
Yeah. Yep.
The referee will not listen to that basketball player who might call in later.
Yes. Dom, who do you follow in soccer? I know, like, I've always known you're national, and I know you like Juventus. Do you have a Premier?
Yeah.
Do you have a Premier League team?
No, not really. I catch Juventus when I can. I watch the Red Bull when I can, but I don't really have any reason to have a Premier League team. So I feel like I would just be a poser if I ever chose one. I just watch whatever's on TV.
Premier League's so
they're playing
good, though.
Yeah, I know you like the Premier League, but the style of soccer is not quite as.
Oh, so you mean when they don't flop on the ground for 20 minutes? Like, I feel like an Italian soccer game is like 4.5 hours long. They're like, extra time. The refs are adding 84 minutes on the clock.
Premier League is great soccer. It's much better than MLS or anything like that. But I still prefer to watch, like, Serie A, things like that. It's just a different time. It's a clumsier game.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I like that aggressive style, though. And that's definitely gone away, too. Like, I mean, half the league is Spanish and African and all this other stuff anyway. So like nowadays there's so much blur between it. It's kind of like the same thing. But
I just remember watching Premier League growing up, and it was big hulking guys, and like it's like, okay, run down the side, cross into the box, everybody jumps up for a header. It's a goal or it's not. Like, yeah, there was like the same flow to the game.
If you edited out the soccer ball, it was actually like an extra scene from Braveheart.
Yeah. Just charging at each other. For some reason, they all have big swords.
I'm very depressed. Steven Gerrard is leaving Liverpool.
Okay. Why is that depressing?
Because that's my team that I followed since we were in high school.
Did you? I don't remember you following them in high school.
Well, I mean, back then it was pretty much, I could look up on the internet and see if they won. But
yeah, that's true.
Once I got to college, like, I was able to kind of watch them every once in a while. And then once I got out of college and, like, owned a house and actually, like, my own cable bill, like, you could watch them almost all the time. I pretty much watch every single one of their games. And that guy is like, the heart and soul of that team. He's coming to the MLS. I'm sad. The only
great careers go to die.
You know what? The MLS is doing good, though.
They're definitely getting their contracts. They're expanding again. It's definitely nowhere close to where it was when it started. Like, when it started, it was just almost humorous. It's like, oh, you're trying to keep up with the 94 World Cup and nobody cares. But now, they went out of their way to make up rules. So it's like, all right, what each team can spend like a $20 million for a $20 million player just so they can get some premier guys over here.
Yeah, and like, remember the rules when they first came out? Remember the shootout? The running shootout?
Remember the clock went down.
Yeah, the clock went down.
They thought American people couldn't go with, like, they couldn't understand a continuous clock running up. So there was like a buzzer, like in basketball.
You know what's funny? I still think Americans don't get it, because every time I watch a soccer game with someone, they're like, 45 minutes. Like, no, but why isn't the half over? You know, like, what is this? I'm like, I don't know.
Call timeout.
It's some weird rule they came up with a long time ago, you know. But go ahead.
No, it has come a long way. Like, I think they've expanded the MLS in a really, really smart way with, like, making sure that everyone has enough for stadiums.
Yep.
And it's just becoming more popular in general. Like, I love that NBC now has the Premier League games, even though I don't really watch them that often. Like, it's just good that it's taken much more seriously. We're talking about, what is that, like, 20 years ago at this point. So that was a long time ago.
Right.
You know, that was like, when we were growing up, people were like, oh, I don't want to play a sport where you don't use your hands. It's for girls. Like, it's come a long, long way.
Yes. Yes. And even just the, you know, what are they, 20 teams now?
I think they're more.
I don't even know.
I mean, they got the two, they got New York
FC.
They're getting, there's another one, Orlando's coming in. I know. No, there's rumors of another Miami team.
I mean, that just that alone has to be profitable. No businessmen are saying, I want a team just to not make a dollar.
Stadiums are wonderful, too. I mean, they did really smart. I remember, like, I think it was like 5 years ago. I mean, I wasn't like a fan of soccer, but I would like watch. And I know my buddy who lives in Chicago, he had like season tickets, and he would do like the bus tours to like close stadiums. I remember the Chicago Fire were playing in Kansas City, and I was watching the game.
The Kansas City?
They were Kansas City Wizards at the time. I think they changed the name to Kansas FC.
They were the Wizards at one time.
But I swear to God, I was watching the game, and I thought they were at like a high school field. And I texted my buddy. I'm like, dude, what kind of stadium is that? He's like, I don't know. I really think we're behind, like in somebody's backyard or something. That's how cheap the stadium was.
The worst was the Metro Stars, and they played at Giant Stadium. Like, they would have, they could have had 13,000 people there, and it looks like two.
Like, yeah, you gotta, that was worse.
That piles in like close to 80 or whatever it is every week, 80, like for the game. So when you have 13,000 people, you know. It looks like there's literally not a person there.
Yeah, the only people who can sell out is Seattle. I mean, they
and
sell
Portland.
Yeah, Portland they got there too. I mean, Seattle, I mean, they're selling out the freaking Seahawks stadium. I mean, that's freaking amazing.
Well, Asians love soccer, so.
Yeah, I mean, soccer stadium just, I mean, even Juventus, like, they have a nice brand new stadium and they sell a lot of tickets, but it's Juventus in Italy, and even them, their stadium is meant for like 40,000 people. You know, like,
right.
Trying to put any soccer game in a 90,000 seat stadium is going to always feel empty and terrible.
Unless it's a World Cup game, then they sell it out.
Yeah, that's true. The World Cup is special.
Yes. So, Dom, I guess we will part ways here, but if one more time, if anyone wants to go to your release, is there someone on the internet to go? I think you said livingdaylights.org or com.
Yeah, livingdaylights.org is like the main production company website, and I just say that because there's a little thing on the right that takes to the Kickstarter.
Okay.
The Kickstarter link is really, really long, impossible. So.
Right, and what about, you have a Twitter, I know, because I have now Verbal Shenanigans. Now we're getting big time. We now have 20 followers, Dom.
Yes, and my film and I are two of those followers.
Oh, your film and you. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for making me feel really down. But you know what? We started it on Sunday. We start on Sunday, and there's a possibility of a big interview coming up. So if that happens, that'd be cool. But you have a Twitter too, right?
The Twitter is @TomTruthMovie, the same, @TomTruthMovie is the Twitter.
Yes.
TomTruthMovie.com is also the eventual, well, it's a website that the movie will actually be sold through too, but that's just pre-orders for now, so.
All right, give, rock out a quick summary for everybody, because we didn't really talk about any content of the movie at all. We just talked about the production side of it. Give us a quick summary of the movie and what it's about a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's a documentary crew following an assemblyman from California as he presents his proposal to cure climate crisis and dependence on foreign oil, obesity, a whole bunch of problems that happen in America, and the way he's going to solve them is take the undocumented workers in California and basically strap them to bicycles that generate electricity in a factory. So it goes through, it's like really serious in the beginning, and it shows all the problems, and then it reveals that that's the solution, and then it's broken up into five different sections of five of the issues that if we could just do this one thing, that it would. Just and you meet all the people along the way that are working at the lab and riding their little bikes and generating electricity and that's basically it. And it's a parody of Al Gore's movie from years back called An Inconvenient Truth.
Yes. So please check that out. We might be able to arrange something where we can come up there, which would be awesome. Other than that, check out those websites. Also, please get on the Verbal Shenanigans Facebook, facebook.com/verbalshenanigans. There is a website coming up soon, hopefully. I just got to keep working on it, which hopefully should be verbalshenanigans.com. Please check out the Johnny Watson Show, which you can hear us on every Monday, streaming live on YouTube, on Blog Talk. You could also download iTunes. Michael Berlow, I'm not sure when this is going up exactly because of circumstances right now, but what kind of shows you got coming up?
Let's see. In February, I'm trying to think. I know at the end of February is Mickey Who.
Oh.
Mickey Who in right off of Route 10. What is that?
Randolph.
Doing that on February 28th.
That's my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah.
February 24th, we will be in Somerset, I think both of us, with Mr. Johnny Watson.
It's January 24th.
I thought it was February
24th. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I didn't have to cancel my show.
Yeah, good job. It is February 24th.
No, it's January 24th. It's next Saturday.
It's Saturday show.
You see how this goes? Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. I'm always wrong. Tuesday, February 20th. Oh, wow. Then maybe I just canceled the show for no reason.
Oh, better call him back up.
Yeah, I'll get back on.
All right.
But anyway, okay. February 22nd.
February 22nd. Oh, yeah, that little thing.
Yeah.
In Dover, we are...
Table 42.
Table 42. Sorry about that. Table 42, Dover. We'll be there with the legendary Chips Cooney, our wonderful friend and headliner, Johnny Watson. Again, it is... I'm not even, like, joking about this, people. We were at the bar. It's a very beautiful bar, very beautiful back room. You will not regret coming to our show. We guarantee you laughs and a wonderful night of comedy. And $30 for a wonderful night of comedy and a meal, that's a hell of a deal. No drink minimum also.
Yes. Excellent. So as for me, I have, let's see. I thought I had next Saturday.
I'm free on the 24th.
I may be back on the show down on the 24th, but as far as January, hold on, I'm bringing up my calendar. January 30th, I will be out in the middle of Pennsylvania with Mr. Joe Fernandez and KP Burke. I don't know the deal on that show, but I'm sure we don't have a lot of listeners in the middle of Pennsylvania. And then on January 31st, I will be at Rocco Romeo's show in Union. What's the name of the place?
Rockin' Joe's
Coffee. Good place, good little room, fun place to see some comedy. And then, of course, February 22nd, people, I need your support. I need your help. Let's get this room going. Dom, I want to thank you for being on the podcast once again. And you're more
thank you.
You're more than welcome coming on anytime. And hopefully we can get out there. Life is funny, people laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back, and I love you.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
All right. Thanks.